EDIT.com.
It's time for Fed Talk, the live show for feds in the know. From federal agencies to Capitol Hill, the attorneys of Shaw, Bransford, and Roth bring in experts from across the federal community to bring you inside the issues. Fed Talk is meant to provide general information about legal issues. However, the views expressed in this program are not intended to provide legal counseling. Listeners are cautioned not to rely upon any statements made in resolving legal issues they may face, but instead to consult with their own attorney about specific situations. Attorneys are not engaged in providing legal services while appearing on the program and are not responsible in any manner for the consequences that may stem directly or indirectly from reliance on any statement made during this program.
Good morning and welcome to Fed Talk. I'm Deborah Roth and welcome to our post-Sammy Awards show. It's one of my absolute favorite shows to do during the year. I feel very fortunate that I drew the Sammy straw here at Fed Talk. And with me today is Jim Seymour of the Partnership for Public Service. Good morning, Jim.
Good morning, Deborah.
And I'm always fortunate Jim's like my my sidekick here when I do the show, because no one knows more, really, frankly, I think, from the partnership about the Sammys than Jim, because Jim is responsible for putting on the event every year. Jim is the director of programs and events at the Partnership for Public Service, where he's been since 2003. Welcome.
Thank you.
And for our listeners, it's very exciting because we have two of the 10 finalists from the Sammy finalists calling in, and they'll be calling in just a few minutes. We're going to talk to both of these finalists. The first one that we have calling in is Todd Grams, and Todd was the 2011 Management Excellence Medal recipient, which is, I understand, the first. Jim, this is the first year you handed out that award.
Right. We added the Management Excellence category to the Sammy's program this year.
And Todd Grams of the Department of Veteran Affairs, he was the first winner of it, and he'll be calling us in shortly. And we also, later on in the show, we have Charles Hurick calling in, and he won the 2011 Justice and Law Enforcement Award. And he's at the Department of Justice, and also a really great story he has. So we really look forward to Charles calling in. So I wanted to preview that for all of our listeners. But if you're new to the Sammys, then we should probably tell you what Sammys even stands for, because I've just thrown that out. I didn't even realize maybe some people have no idea what I'm talking about.
Sure. Well, I'll tell a little bit about that. The Sammys is short for the Service to America Medals. Actually, they're formerly known as the Samuel J. Heyman Service to America Medals. Last year, we renamed them after the founder of the Partnership for Public Service, Sam Heyman, who had served in government early in his career, worked in the Kennedy administration, and subsequently went into private work, private industry, and always felt a strong conviction to want to give back to government and really help to inspire that the best and brightest in our country would serve in government. And that is why he founded the Partnership for Public Service, our organization, a nonprofit, nonpartisan organization here in Washington, working to inspire young people, especially into government service. But also we partner with agencies to help them to be more effective and innovative in their work so that the agencies are delivering the best value for the taxpayers' dollars.
Which, that's certainly the call to arms these days in these very difficult budget times. And, you know, Jim, for people who want to sort of get a look at who the partnership is and these award winners, because this year you have video streaming on your website about from each of them telling their story, which is very cool. What's the website for the partnership?
The website for the partnership is ourpublicservice.org. It's O-U-R, publicservice.org. And also folks can visit the Service to America Medals website, which is simply servicetoamericamedals.org. And as you say, on the website, they can learn all about our 34 finalists that we had this year, our 9 award recipients, including the Federal Employee of the Year. They can find information about the nominations process, and we'll talk about that a little bit this show. Learn how folks can nominate, how they get selected to receive this honor. And then, as you mentioned, read about the stories of this year's finalists and award recipients.
I love watching their stories. I mean, it's so inspiring to hear what these, you know, what your award winners do. Even the finalists, reading the finalists' stories. So you have 9 categories?
Yeah, well, we accept nominations in 8 different categories. The Federal Employee of the Year is selected from all of the finalists in those 8 categories. So that's why we have a 9th award at the Sammy's Gala each year.
And the 8 categories are?
I'll go through them. We have Call to Service, which is for young people in government. We want to really emphasize the important contributions that young people in government service make. So that is for people who are 35 or younger and have only served in the federal government for 5 years or fewer. At the other range, we have our Career Achievement category for folks that have been serving in the federal government for at least 20 years or more. A lot of times it's 30 or 40 years when we're recognizing them.
These are your bookends.
Yes. And they're folks that have demonstrated amazing contributions throughout their career in government service and sometimes in different sectors of the federal government. And then we have categories related to specific fields of government, whether it's science and environment, helping to protect our natural resources and protect our environment, justice and law enforcement. We'll hear about Chuck Hurek's story a little bit later. Homeland security is a very important area, international affairs, citizen services. So 6 different categories for those specific fields of government.
And the Sammys, as I said, this is our post-Sammy award show. The Sammys were last week or the week before?
They were just last week on September 15th.
And they're held here in D.C., right?
Yes. It's a really big day for these folks that are being honored. We started the day with a group tour at the White House. All the finalists were invited to come to the White House to have a tour of the East Wing and the Executive Mansion. For lunchtime, we took them. We had a lunch to help recognize them. And what was really special to that, and really the Sammy's Gala, too, is we were able to bring together folks that are in really significant positions in government.
Yeah.
For the luncheon, we had the Federal Chief Performance Officer, Jeff Zients, the White House Chief of Staff, Bill Daley, the Deputy Secretary from HHS, Bill Corr. And these are folks that came together not to be recognized, but rather to help showcase the great stories that these Sammy's winners and finalists are doing.
And that day was for all your finalists, not just for the award winners.
Exactly.
And,
all 34 finalists.
People don't know that they're the they don't know that they're the award winner until that day?
We do let them know in advance. We announce the finalists early in the summer. We have a breakfast in May on Capitol Hill where, again, all the finalists get to come together. Their members of Congress come and help recognize them for being finalists. And then throughout the summer, we're preparing for the awards gala. And so we do let those folks know whether they are the award recipients or are not selected to receive the award in their categories.
But what's nice is all the finalists, I think that's what's so nice about it, is that all the finalists you bring on the day of the gala and you celebrate them all the day of the gala.
And certainly through the Sammy's program, really the big thing is we want to make sure these stories are getting shared throughout the country with the American people. You know, especially right now, we're in a heated political time. There's the debt reduction time, the climate on the Capitol Hill. We're coming into the political campaign season for next year's election.
I think we're in it.
We are in it.
I feel we're in it.
You know, so there's a lot of talk about what's not working in government. And we want to balance that dialogue throughout the country. We want to make sure that these stories are shared so that the American people know and appreciate the great work that federal employees are doing on behalf and show that value of service that the federal employees are delivering on our behalf.
And other than sort of this sort of inside the beltway feel to the Sammys, how else does the partnership sort of get the word out? Because that I know from, you know, watching the partnership from its early days till today, that's really one of the hallmarks of what it stands for. It's like we not just want to talk to federal employees or people thinking about becoming feds, but we want to talk to everybody about what the contributions are of government workers. How do they get the word out about these people?
Every way we can, really. And it starts with great media partners here in Washington, D.C. area. We obviously have a great relationship with Federal News Radio, opportunities to interview all of the finalists throughout the summer leading up to the awards gala to help their stories get told. We've also been able to work a lot with the Washington Post in doing Fed Players, weekly stories of profiling federal employees. And that's an opportunity, too, where you don't even have to be a finalist for the Sammys. We'll draw from all of the nominations. We get upwards of 400 or 500 nominations each year, and that is great material for us to find outstanding federal employees throughout government, throughout the country, so we can tell stories about those folks, get them in the media. And certainly with all of the finalists, You know, we reach out to their hometown newspapers, wherever they are in the country. We'll reach out to their alumni magazines to make sure that, you know, the folks that they went to school with or, you know, students that are in those schools now will hear about those opportunities and think, oh, wait, there are really cool things that government employers are doing. I'd like to learn more about that.
Yeah, it's unfortunate that some of the stereotypes associated with all government work is that it's a sort of gray, dry, bureaucratic endeavor. You read the awards, just their descriptions, but then you go and you listen to their videos and you're like, you know, some of this stuff is enormously cool. We are going to hear from one of the award winners very shortly, right after our first break, but we do need to take our first break. You're listening to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Hello, my federal friends. It's the Geico Gecko, and I've got good news for you. I might even say it's some of the best news ever. Okay, well, definitely in the top three. The big news. Geico now offers discounts for most federal employees, GS7 or above, which is no doubt a lot of you out there. So you could be saving hundreds of dollars on your car insurance, all with a company that began over 70 years ago with the sole purpose of serving government employees like yourself. Yeah, that's right. Geico, the government employees insurance company. And today, well, we're the third largest car insurance company in the nation. And did you know about Geico's 97% customer satisfaction rate? Well, saving money tends to make people rather happy, I think. So congrats again to those federal employees GS7 or above. Welcome to the Savings Club. Mike?
Got it. Hey, folks, this is Mike Causey. The Gecko's right. Discounts are available for most federal employees GS7, the equivalent or above. Just call Geico at 1-800-947-AUTO, go to geico.com, or visit your local Geico office to see how much you could save.
Welcome back to Fed Talk. I'm Deborah Roth, and with me today is Jim Seymour of the Partnership for Public Service. Jim is the Director of Programs and Events at the Partnership, and I'm going to say Jim personally responsible for putting on the Sammy's Gala. You know, I get to say it. It's my show. And this is our post-Sammy show that we like to do here on Fed Talk each year. And as I told our listeners right before the break, we're very excited. We have one of the medal recipients joining us right now. And this is Todd Grams of the Department of Veterans Affairs. He received the 2011 Management Excellence Award. And Todd, it's great to have you on our show.
Oh, it's great to be here. Thank you for the opportunity this morning.
And congratulations. Not only did you win a Sammy, but you were the first to win this particular category. So a trailblazer, right?
Well, it's truly an honor and much appreciated.
And I thought we'd have Jim tell our listeners first about what this category of awards is all about and why the partnership added it this year.
Yes, Deborah. And so as you said, there's a new category that we added to the Sammy's program. And in some ways, all of the awards are about excellence in government management, but really wanted to find a way to make sure that we are showcasing some of the things that are outside of the public eye. You know, these aren't stories that you're going to see in a spy novel or, you know, a major scientific breakthrough. But really wanted the opportunity to find where we could recognize, you know, excellent human capital management, excellent financial management, perhaps a better way of working across agencies so that agencies are working more effectively together, or also introducing really strong public-private partnerships. And so those are the kind of stories we want to make sure that we gave them due recognition for the excellence in service to government, too.
And Todd, when I read the description of what you did to win the award, you know, and go on the website, for many Americans, they might read and go, oh, isn't that what government's about? You know, that's what his job was. And, you know, and the reality is that things in the government, they get done the way they get done because that's how they always got done. And it gets very stovepiped. You know, I think what you brought to the department really is going to change the way services are delivered to many veterans.
And that's our intention. And I understand that reaction if someone outside the Beltway read the script from the partnership's website, because a lot of what we're doing is common sense.
Right.
And that's what Americans want out of their government. And, for example, what we've done along the lines of improving services for veterans that may appear like common sense but actually took an incredible effort on the part of our team over here was to integrate our capital planning program. We spend $2 billion, billion with a B,
yeah,
taxpayer money every year on VA's capital infrastructure across the country. And up until last year, it had been done in stovepipes across the three administrations, health care, cemeteries, and benefits. And so for the first time, what we've done is brought all that together in an integrated system so that when we ask the White House and Congress for money, we know that the next dollar that we'd spend is going to the absolute highest priority to benefit veterans and their families.
And when I read the description, Todd, I got the sense that most of the work you've done to sort of integrate the three main missions of Veterans Affairs was all done in 2010? That's a busy year.
It was a busy year, and also partly in 2011. And I think that is an important point to raise, because while it certainly is an honor for me to receive this award, it's a great honor, it really is a reflection of the people who were here before I ever got here. I did not come in and wave some magic wand. I think I helped set a direction, a more clear direction for the organization. I think I brought in some additional people to complement the great people who were already here. And I'd like to think I gave them the support that they needed then to be successful. So although this looks like a big bang in 2010, I mean, people were heading in the right direction on some of these things and just needed some help. And some of them were being done in pieces, but just needed a leader to come in and pull them all together and be a catalyst for pushing them forward. And so VA did have a very, very good year in 2010.
Yeah, and you know, the way you describe it, it reminds me of the concept of the tipping point. And for our listeners, I want to let everybody know, I don't think I told everybody what your position is over there at Veterans Affairs, and you're the executive in charge of the Office of Management and Chief Financial Officer.
That's
and obviously,
correct.
When you hear that title, for people who are inside the Beltway, when you hear that title, you go, well, no one really was better situated to look across the three mission areas of the VA and figure out how could we streamline and create processes that made us more efficient to get the services and benefits out to veterans. I mean, you really held the unique position in the agency.
There's no question about that. The position is the perfect platform for driving this kind of change. But, of course, it wouldn't have happened without the support of the secretary and the deputy secretary, who set a vision for the agency and have had the courage to stay that vision and that course in spite of significant challenges and risks. And as I said earlier, the team that's here in OM, fantastic team, very good at delivering on some pretty strong demands that we've put on them over the past couple years. A good example of that, you know, the president has his campaign now to eliminate waste from the federal government. And when I got here, VA was about to sign a contract for $500 million for a new financial system. And we were forging ahead with that. And I just asked the team here to take a deep breath and really look at everything we could do across the department to improve financial management and come back and tell me if this investment was really the best way that would have the most impact for the money on what we could do to improve the department. And they actually came back in a couple months and said the answer to that was no.
Yeah, and you know, I must say that thought process, having sort of watched the government for over 20 years of my career from the outside representing federal employees, that thought process is really the opposite of how the bureaucracy works. Once it starts heading in a direction, and I say this to my clients all the time, you know how hard it is to get the U.S. government to change course. It's extremely hard. That inertia takes over. Well, that's the direction we're heading in. We all decided to go there, and everybody, if there are bumps along the way, they just try to ride them out, as opposed to, are we still on the right course?
And I think one of the advantages we had in stopping this system was the fact that what drove it was there were 14 other things that we knew if we did and did well in 10, 11, and 12, that the department would actually be better off if we did those things, and we'd actually be able to spend the taxpayer dollars more wisely, get greater value, and that in the end here at the VA translates into better services and benefits for our nation's veterans. And for us, you know, that's what it's all about. One of the things we did do instead of replacing that financial system is we had had three material weaknesses in our financial management at the VA for over a decade. They were in systems, they were in operations, and they were in our ability to estimate liabilities in our entitlement programs. And when we got our audit from our financial statement auditor last year, they concluded, based on all the hard work that the folks did here at the VA, that we had eliminated those three material weaknesses.
Todd, I just got chills. Congratulations. That's wonderful.
And like I said, these guys did a fantastic job, but if we'd have been working on that system, we wouldn't have delivered anything in that amount of time. We would have spent tens of millions of dollars, and we'd still have three material weaknesses today.
And as a taxpayer, I must thank you.
You're welcome.
And it sounds, Todd, like, you know, really what you were able to drive there, and obviously with the great support and backup from your political leadership, is to create that culture to challenge the system, to take risks and create innovations, that it's not so much about the innovation of what you did, but the innovation of creating that culture within the agency.
Absolutely. And you can already see a difference just going through that exercise in our own organization of calling a timeout on the $500 million spend, evaluating it. And to be honest with you, when we first started that exercise, there was a lot of, I'd say, cautious optimism on the part of the folks on the team. And truth be told, I think in the end they thought we were going to go ahead with the system anyway for the reasons that we were just talking about mm-hmm. The momentum of a bureaucracy.
It's the workplace mindset.
Exactly.
And I think a part of your story, too, that I find very interesting is you have a wealth of experience in government management preceding the VA. Can you talk a little bit about your career in government?
I've been in the government 31 years and wouldn't change a minute of it. It has just been the most wonderful opportunity for I believe, making a difference, but as well, just continual professional development. I have worked in the Department of Commerce. I spent 11 years at the Office of Management and Budget. I spent 7 years at...
We interrupt this program to activate the emergency alert system for the Washington, D.C. metropolitan operational area because of a local weather emergency.
The National Weather Service in Sterling, Virginia has issued a flash flood warning for western Carroll County in north-central Maryland and Frederick County in north-central Maryland until 3:15 this afternoon. National Weather Service Doppler radar indicating a developing area of heavy rain in Frederick County and moving into extreme western Carroll County. Estimated rainfall of more than an inch has occurred in the past hour north of Frederick. Another inch is likely between Frederick and Emmitsburg along or near Route 15, as well as eastward toward the Carroll County border. Some locations that will be affected by the heavy rain include Ballinger Creek, Braddock Heights, Emmitsburg, Frederick, Green Valley, Mount Airy, New Market, Thurmont, and Walkersville. And of course, precautionary preparedness actions mean that you should not drive your vehicle into areas where the water covers the roadway. That water depth may be too great to allow your car to cross safely. Move to higher ground. Again, the National Weather Service issuing a flash flood warning for Frederick County and western Carroll County, both in north central Maryland, until 3:15 this afternoon.
Todd, thank you for hanging in there while the emergency broadcast played. You heard that, right?
I did not.
Oh, I'm sorry. It was an emergency broadcast that was playing on flash flood alerts here in the Washington, D.C. area that overrode the show, and we heard it. And so I want to, you know, obviously we wanted to get that message out to the local listeners. So I know that we were talking right before the emergency broadcast announcement, we were talking about your career in the federal system and the different agencies you've worked at. We have a few more minutes left with you, and I thought it would be really interesting to our listeners. You've already told us a few of the things and conceptually what it was you did at the VA. If you could dig in a little bit more deeper for people who are listening and might want to learn from it, if you could give us a little bit more detail of some of the things you did that streamlined these two, these three rather segregated areas of the VA.
Sure. Look, one of the things that we have is the secretary and the deputy secretary want VA to operate more as one department. They want that streamline. They want that integration. Integration is our watchword. So having that commitment at the top is absolutely critical. What we took that and we ran with it, and we set up the direction we wanted to go in by establishing priorities. There were hundreds of things we could have done. All of them would have been good, but if we would have tried to do all of them, would have made a little progress on a lot of fronts and not really got the big bangs that we were striving for. We also set up the governance processes in place, not to be heavy-handed, but to make sure that we were bringing the right people together at the right time to push these initiatives forward. And that now has become a common practice here, where the other assistant secretaries and I sit down once a month reevaluating our priorities, reevaluating or evaluating our progress on each initiative, and then problem solving around the table. And that's very critical too, because not only is the integration in these big initiatives that we've just talked about, but it's in little ways like that of really getting the team on the same page and having reviews of where we're supposed to be in the context of how can we help each other, not you didn't make this number, why not? More as support than punishment.
I can understand, because I've watched the VA, as I said, from outside for about 20 years, and I always explain the VA to new lawyers who come and work at our law firm. Regrettably, Todd, you'll regret to hear this. There's three separate things. There are three things the VA does, right? Hospitals, cemeteries, and benefits. And apparently, that separation, I guess, from the inside was very loudly communicated to the outside, because you used to see it as three separate things. And I get that if you wanted to integrate them, that you could really, there'd be cost savings. I see that. How does the integration also help you in the delivery of services to your veterans?
That's actually a very good question. And I'll come back to my earlier point about the capital planning program. We deliver our services through veterans, through our great people, but also through our capital infrastructure. One of our priorities right now is to increase access for veterans. Mm-hmm. And that really comes down to the infrastructure. If we're not there, then the veteran won't have access to the benefits and the services that they deserve. So making sure that the next dollar we spend on that capital infrastructure is where veterans need it the most,
right,
drives that access. Other areas that we're working on is to decrease the backlog in our compensation claims. And so we've been working very hard to ensure that things, for example, that can be done in our healthcare systems in terms of helping with exams of veterans are streamlined, are more closely coordinated with our benefits administration. We don't want veterans to necessarily see or feel this per se when they come in to meet with us, but behind the scenes we want it to be working so that we can process their claims more quickly.
Well, it's hard to imagine an agency within the government that wasn't, more affected by the wars that we've been in the last decade. And I talked with you at the beginning of your interview about, you said, well, it really wasn't just me, it was all those people who came before me. And it was really, the national circumstance of the situation that the country was in. It was like it hit a tipping point, and something really did have to change at the VA. People felt that if something didn't really drastically change, the agency really wasn't going to be able to get the job done.
And I think a key to that, again, you know, most of this stuff, 80% of this stuff comes back to people, and I know you guys already know that. But the president's selection of General Shinseki to become the secretary of the VA was just a stroke of genius.
Yeah, people loved that choice.
This is a man who devoted his entire life to the military. He was the Army Chief of Staff. I'm hard-pressed to think of anyone who would know the military any better. And putting him over here on this part of the cycle of our national defense, because that's really what VA is.
Mm-hmm.
We're a sister, we're a brother, we're an extension of DOD. Mm-hmm. What they do drives what happens here almost more than anything else.
Mm-hmm.
So having someone like him come in and have that perspective and that desire to create an institution that can better serve veterans by being better integrated and also reaching out to DOD to try to improve our integration with them to make where we can reduce overlaps and gaps and make that more seamless as our veterans are leaving the military as active duty and then coming into our family is also important.
Well, Todd, I want to thank you for being on our show. When I think about this award category and you know where the VA was and the issues it had facing it and its veterans and the work you've done, veterans are so lucky to have had you there at the right time. And of course, American taxpayers applaud and appreciate all your good work. So congratulations from all of us at Fed Talk on winning the 2011 Management Excellence Award from the partnership. And it sounds to me like you intend to continue with public service and well into the future.
Absolutely. It's going to be my pleasure to do that. And I'd just like to close by saying, you know, I'm the one who got to stand up there and get the award, but every day over 300,000 employees across the country come to work every day to provide better services and benefits to our veterans. And it's just wonderful to be part of that.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Take care.
That was Todd Grams, the Executive in Charge, Office of Management and Chief Financial Officer at the Department of Veterans Affairs. He was the Partnership for Public Service's 2011 Management Excellent Medal recipient. First time the award was given out by the partnership. And if you go on their website and you read the work that Todd Grams did for the VA, you will know why he won it. We are going to take our mid-show commercial break. You are listening to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Hey, it's the Geico Gecko. Now, as a federal employee, you're probably one for a smart presentation, so I've put together some charts and graphs here. There you go. That will help illustrate the money you could save by switching to Geico. First thing you'll notice is that Geico now offers discounts to most federal employees GS7 or above. Now, this is big news. But that shouldn't come as any surprise from a car insurance company that has been serving government employees since 1936. And as you can see on this graph here, it's probably why we're the third largest car insurance company in the nation. Yeah, no, I do actually realise you can't see these, but trust me, they're rather impressive. Especially the 97% customer satisfaction rate. And when you consider it only takes 15 minutes to see if you could save 15% or more, well, all you GS7 employees or above should just contact Geico. Tell them, Mike.
Hey, folks, this is Mike Causey, and the Gecko said it best. Most federal employees GS7, the equivalent or above, could get a discount on their car insurance. Just call Geico at 1-800-947-AUTO, go to geico.com, or visit your local Geico office to see how much you could save.
I'm Bill Bransford, host of Fed Talk and partner at the law firm of Shaw, Bransford & Roth. Fed Talk brings you inside information on hot topics in the federal community. From the halls of Congress to federal agencies, get the latest on the laws, regulations, and activities that directly impact federal employees. Tune into Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, as we bring in the experts to bring you inside the issues.
Welcome back to Fed Talk. I'm Deborah Roth, and this is our post-Sammy's award show. And with us this morning in the studio is Jim Seymour, the Director of Programs and Events at the Partnership for Public Service, where he's been since 2003. Jim, thank you again for joining us and bringing the Sammy's to Fed Talk.
Always great to be here.
And for our listeners who might just be tuning in to Fed Talk, the Sammy's stand for...
They are the Samuel J. Heyman Service to America medals.
Service to America. You know, the Emmys, folks, it's the Emmys for TV, it's the Sammys for public service. And the Sammys Gala was held last week where the awards were handed out. But if you go to the Sammys website, I understand you can look at video clip interviews of all of the award winners, which probably bring a tear to your eyes. Or somebody like me, I get so, I don't know, like it. It's very sentimental.
Exactly. And you can watch the videos of our 9 award recipients and read the stories of all of our 34 finalists. But watching their stories, you really get the humble passion of dedicated service to our country where, you know, these folks do not seek out this kind of recognition. They are blown away when they know that their work and their accomplishments are being recognized by top folks in government. You know, we had 3 cabinet secretaries at the awards gala to help honor them. We had Chris Van Hollen, one of the super committee members and lead in Congress right now, participate in recognizing these folks. And typically those folks come to a gala and they're the ones being recognized. And here they come to the Sammy so they can shine a spotlight on the dedicated public servants that are doing so much on our behalf.
Yeah. And I do encourage the listeners to go to the website and read the stories of the people. They're so inspiring, and it makes you realize that government does do good things. I mean, these people do really great things. If you were listening before our break and you heard from Todd Grams, who's over at the Department of Veterans Affairs, an agency that was in dire need of a remanagement focus because of the overwhelming amount of need from veterans, service veterans, for their services, and they were just inundated. And, the agency had a very hard time playing catch up, but it sounds like through Todd's effort and his team that they really are on their way to providing superior services to veterans. We're very fortunate to have a second award winner with us today, who's going to join us in a moment. And the category that we're highlighting is the 2011 Justice and Law Enforcement category. And with us by phone, the award winner is Charles Hurick. Good morning, Charles.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
And thank you, Charles, for being on our show and spending some time with us to get the word out about the good work. Talk about, sentiment and work that brings a tear to your eye. The work you've done at the Justice Department really touched individual, family members' lives. And you must be so appreciative and honored to be a Sammy's recipient.
I am, Deborah. And I, again, want to say what a great job Jim and his team at the partnership and their corporate sponsors did, again, with the Sammy's event. I was fortunate enough to be a team member of an awardee in 2007 and to be named another finalist and then medalist for the Justice and Law Enforcement category for our National Missing and Unidentified Persons System did actually, as you said, blow me away because it's just such a great honor.
Yeah.
And it's wonderful to be recognized for the work that we do for everyone in this country.
I'm going to have Jim tell our listeners, give a little introduction, Chuck, about the award category, and then we're going to turn it over to you, Chuck, to tell us all about the work that your team's been doing.
Sure.
Yes, and so Chuck was the winner of our 2011 Justice and Law Enforcement Medal, and this can cover a range of services to the American people, whether it's criminal investigations, counterterrorism, in this case helping to identify missing persons. We have folks that have worked to stop human trafficking, to stop drug trafficking, and so a whole range of things in the justice and law enforcement field. But then, so we can hear a little bit about what Chuck has done in that area.
What I've done is essentially helped to manage and develop an online database for missing and unidentified persons cases. We held a missing persons summit in 2005, the Department of Justice did, and it was determined back then that every day there are over 100,000 active missing persons cases in this country, and the potential for at least 40,000 sets of unidentified remains to be anywhere from medical examiners and coroner's offices.
That's a lot of people.
That it is quite a few. And the over 100,000, many, many of them are returned within a very short period of time. They're runaways and things of that nature.
Mm-hmm.
But there is a significant portion that are considered long-term missing adults.
Mm.
And And unlike missing children, a lot of times missing adult cases don't get taken as seriously as the child cases because many people expect that adults can go off on their own and do things. But we've discovered that a large percentage of these long-term missing adults are the victims of violent crime.
Yeah.
So this system we've put together has one side which has all missing persons cases and the other side which has unidentified remains cases. And through the input of law enforcement, medical examiners, and coroners, and, which is unique to this system, the general public,
yeah,
we hope that these two systems can find potential matches and as well just provide investigative leads to anybody investigating these cases.
Now, this isn't something that just grows up overnight.
No, this was a long time in the making.
Yeah.
Again, in 2005, it was suggested that while there is the NCIC system that the FBI hosts for law enforcement, we needed something that was a little bit more user-friendly and that could be accessed by the general public. Because in a lot of these cases, the friends and family members and loved ones have information that over time they forgot that they hadn't given in these cases. And they can go in and actually enter significant information into this missing persons database once it's approved by a law enforcement agency. And we have had a number of cases that have been resolved by the general public.
Now, as I understand, you've been working on this project since about 2005. When did you go live? When did the system go live?
The system, as it stands today, went live in July of 2009. And that means what we had was we had the unidentified person side and then we had the missing person side. And in 2009, we added the capability for the two systems to communicate with each other and be able to cross-check the cases. And that's really, I think, our most important live date.
You know, we've had on our show a couple of years ago, we had FBI agents on talking about educating our listeners about crimes that were committed over the internet. And with the advent of the internet, you know, we think of the average American, the average world citizen who has a computer and access to the World Wide Web thinks of the internet as, you know, almost like, I don't want to say a toy, but it's something that brings them pleasure. You know, it's, you can talk to friends, you can talk to relatives, you can shop, you can remotely work. It's a positive contribution to our life. And we had these agents on explaining that the type of crimes now that are committed through the internet and by use of the internet and what it's really done to criminal enterprises, the explosion of crime over because of, you know, the advent of the World Wide Web. I then hear your story, Chuck, and I go, you're the counterpoint, because all of the unsolved, you know, missing persons cases, think of the ability to, you know, get that information through, you know, through into the system and be able to sort of connect the dots in ways that you would never have been able to do without the internet.
That's true, and it does work on both sides of justice and law enforcement.
Yeah.
Because the internet has given everybody accessibility to pretty much everything. But it has worked in our favor because, as was highlighted at the Sammy's Gala, we had a young lady named Stephanie Clack attend the gala with us. And Stephanie saw a public service announcement on a television show for our system. She went into the system, found her sister's case. Her sister went missing in 1987 from Kansas City, Missouri area, and was found 14 hours later, had been strangled, and was in Ohio. And at that time, there was no way for anyone to communicate between these two law enforcement agencies other than the old mechanism,
right,
which didn't really travel across states all that well.
And it didn't work for them.
No, and now with the internet, she went in just after seeing this public service announcement, put in two tattoos that were unique to her sister, and immediately came up with a unidentified person that had been found in Ohio, and the case was entered into our system in 2009. It ended up being a match. So you see, from 1987 to 2009, 22 years, went by.
Right, 22 years.
And our tool was able to, you know, resolve that case very quickly.
Well, resolve the case and bring, you know, without the cliche, bring that closure to the family, you know, the emotional closure of wondering what happened. Now they know. And, you know, it's just, it's mind-boggling because what happened to her 14 hours later, but it took the family 22 years. I mean, the magic of technology and the internet, you know, that you were able to sort of bring to people's lives.
Yes, and without her being able to be identified, once she was identified, that gave the investigators a lot more to go on, because if someone is unidentified, they don't know their family, they don't know their friends, they don't know who they, you know, were hanging around. So it just completely opens up the investigation when we're able to identify someone through our system.
Yeah, it's a remarkable system. We do, Chuck, we want to talk to you more about the work that you and your team have done on the National Missing and Unidentified Person System. I hope you'll hold on. We do need to take the final commercial break for our show. You're listening to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
It's the Geico Gecko with a little hello to all you federal employees. Now, in government, there are people on all points of the political spectrum, but there is one thing that everyone agrees on. Saving money is good, which brings me to the big news. GEICO now offers discounts to most federal employees GS7 or above. It don't matter if you're a Democrat or an aristocrat, left wing, right wing or a chicken wing. If you're a federal employee GS7 or above, you could be saving a lot of money on your car insurance by switching to GEICO. So no matter if you're blue or red or in my case green. If you're a federal employee GS7 or above, contact GEICO and see how much you could save. Isn't that right, Mike?
Exactly right, my little green friend. Hey, folks, this is Mike Causey. And like the Gecko said, discounts are available for most federal employees, GS7, the equivalent, or above. Just call GEICO at 1-800-947-AUTO, go to geico.com, or visit your local GEICO office to see how much you could save.
Welcome back to Fed Talk. I'm Deborah Roth, and you're in the last few minutes of our post-SAMI show, a show we like to bring our listeners every year. And we're very fortunate to have with us in the studio this morning Jim Seymour, who's with the Partnership for Public Service. And hopefully we still have Charles Hurick from the Justice Department on the phone with us. Charles, you still with us?
Yes, I am.
And you know, Charles is the award winner, 2011 SAMI Award winner for Justice and Law Enforcement. He's the program manager for the National Missing and Unidentified Person System, which is a office inside the Justice Department. And you've been working, I understand, on this. You call it NAMIS, right?
That's correct. NAMIS, and that's the acronym for the National Missing and Unidentified Person System, as you said.
You've been working on NAMIS, yes, for a couple of years, and you've gone live, and you've got some pretty good stats as a result of having your system up and running and integrated. The missing is now integrated with the unidentified, right?
That's correct, and in both systems, we just have reached the 17,000 case mark, so we're really pleased about that.
And, you know, one of the things that you said was one of the more interesting hallmarks of your system was that it was accessible to the public. So can anyone from the public go online and look in your system?
Yes, the system is publicly accessible. There is information on the missing person side that when a case is put in, law enforcement agencies that are handling the cases can deem as law enforcement sensitive.
Mm-hmm.
The same can be said on the unidentified remains side for medical examiners and coroners. They can check off certain information as not being publicly accessible. So when someone from home goes in to look at cases, they see everything that has been allowed by the case managers to be publicly accessible. So there is, you know, information there that is still very critical to ongoing investigations, and they can't see that.
Mm-hmm.
But there is a good deal of information that they can see, and there are a lot of search criteria, as I said, physical characteristics all the way down to scars, tattoos, and unusual birthmarks and things of that nature that they can enter as search criteria to pull up cases that might be matches.
So for people who are listening, like the Stephanie Clacks, who have a missing friend or relative, and this is the first they're hearing about this program, they can go on your website, put information in and see if anything's in there?
Yes, they can go and do a general search. They can search state by state and enter all of the criteria that they want to enter if they're looking for a specific person.
It's really it's just such a remarkable tool for law enforcement. But when you think about, you know, the secondary victims of these crimes, what a wonderful tool you offer people to be part of the process and maybe even help, you know, reach the conclusion and find out what's happened to their loved ones. So really great work, Chuck. And I understand that you had a moment of inspiration to join public service. I think it would be interesting for our listeners and fun for them to hear how you got interested in public service.
Well, public service kind of came in a long road, actually. I got interested in forensic science back in my junior high school, middle school days by watching the show Quincy M.E. with Jack Klugman.
Oh.
And found that the connection between science and solving crime was something that not a lot of people knew about. And obviously now, with all the technology that's evolved and all of the shows that are on
right.
television now.
It was the original CIS.
It really was.
Right.
It was much more low tech. And,
yeah.
And Jack Klugman used to do a lot of things that medical examiners back then didn't do, but which is very similar to today's shows. There are a lot of entertainment value, but they are factual in most areas of technology and things other than solving, you know, major crimes in 1 hour. But that's where I got my initial interest in public service, and that took me through the Baltimore City Crime Lab and Montgomery County, Maryland Police Crime Lab as a DNA analyst, and then into public service at the federal level.
And everybody's been very fortunate to have you as part of their team, Chuck.
Well, thank you.
Congratulations. Keep up the good work. And, I think from everybody here at Fed Talk, we want to congratulate you on being the 2011 Justice and Law Enforcement Medal recipient from the Partnership for Public Service.
Thank you very much, and thanks again to Jim and his team for the fantastic job that they do every year.
Okay, great. Thank
you. It's our pleasure. We look forward to having you back as a nominator, too.
Okay.
Thank you, Chuck. So, Jim, we have literally just a few more minutes left, and the things that I wanted to cover were the process, because it's like starting again, like people... to nominate and selection. Tell our listeners how that goes, and you've got like 3 minutes.
Okay. Well, the simple fact is that anyone can visit our website, servicetoamericamedals.org, and all of the information is online, from the medal categories to the nomination process and selection process. I'll mention that all career civilian federal employees are eligible. The exclusions are, you know, they're not political appointees, they're not active duty military, they're not contractors. These are folks that are working in government as civilian federal employees. And anyone may participate as a nominator. It could be a boss, a colleague, a family member. If you know a federal employee who's doing something really amazing like these folks, like Todd and Chuck, if you think that their story inspires you, we want to make sure that those stories are heard outside the Beltway, outside the federal agencies.
And, you know, you might not necessarily nominate somebody who becomes an award winner, but you might nominate somebody who gets profiled in those ongoing promos you get out in the Washington Post. So people should get the names out.
Exactly. And as I mentioned, we receive about 400 to 500 nominations each year, because really think that every nomination is an excellent opportunity to recognizing outstanding work of a colleague in your agency. And so, you know, most nominees just say, you know, to be honest, just being nominated is an honor, but to recognize them and show that appreciation, we send everyone a letter of congratulations for being nominated. And then if they do make it to the finalist level, then they get all of these accolades and recognition that we've talked about. And we engage a Blue Ribbon Panel Selection Committee to help us choose the awards. This year we had Director John Barry from OPM, Senator Mike Bennett from Colorado, Representative Lamar Smith from Texas, even the COO from Facebook, Sally Sandberg, participated in the selection process. So these folks, you know, lend their credentials and expertise to help us find these amazing stories so we can tell them more broadly.
And when did you know when nominations close?
We've set up the first week of January to close our nominations. So now's the time to
start writing.
To start writing. And what we encourage people is read the profiles of this year's finalists. You want to write your nomination as if you're writing that profile story. You know, what's going to be that headline that's going to get the story into the newspaper or onto a radio show so that we can, it makes our job easier to tell them and celebrate their work.
And you have some corporate sponsors you want to mention in the last 10 seconds of our show.
Yes, real quickly, I mentioned our media partners, obviously our corporate partners. This awards program would not be possible. So just a quick recognition of DuPont, Chevron, CH2M Hill, Bloomberg Government, Booz Allen Hamilton, and United Technologies are our national sponsors. We really appreciate their support as well as all of our